Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Välkomna till Rockbaren då.
Igen, ännu en podd och den här gången från en exklusiv hotellkedja i Stockholm. Eller inte ens en kedja, det är bara ett hotell.
Ja, vi sitter i Guldbaren.
Ja,
på... We're in the Gold Bar.
Yes. And we're here with a German guy, but we're not going to do this in German. We're going to do this in Swedish because my German sucks.
Varom nicht?
I can only say bad words in German.
there's more bad words than good words.
And I learned them all from movies.
From movies?
Yes, yes.
Not from the scoreboard.
Yeah, fick mich, you know.
Jag kommer.
Oh, here you go. You see some strange ones too.
Well, you know, I've been on tour here. All right, I mean... talking about movies on television in hotel rooms when we were a young band.
The guy with the vocabulary in Swedish to be very proud of is Tobias Sammet from Avantasia.
And
also
hello.
A guy.
And do you know that your name in Swedish is Velvet? Sammet?
Yeah, it's the same in German.
Oh, it's okay.
It's an old German term for... Samt Velvet, yeah.
Okay.
Tobias Velvet refers to my voice.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, you have that bedroom voice.
That velvet voice.
So, just to backtrack a little bit, give us the brief background history of Avantasia.
Wow.
You started out in
99 with Avantasia, yeah. It was meant to be a one-off project. It was meant to be a... Well, a little not an all-star project. You don't perceive it as an all-star project. I wanted to record music, not with a band, but just with myself and with people that inspired me when I was a kid. And write heavy metal songs for Michael Kiske, who was not singing heavy metal songs back then. I wanted to create my own little rendition of Halloween, so to speak. And with other singers as well that inspired me. And I had to find the right frame to give it a validity to work with different singers. And so I thought, okay, that sounds like a musical or like an opera. Let's do something like that. A one-off project, no live shows, just a record, a little castle in the sky of a little German boy who wants to work with his heroes. Yeah, and I did it, and it was great. Then I went back to work with my other band, Edguy.
Edguy, yeah. And that was still this was like a simultaneous thing.
It was a simultaneous thing.
Doing Edguy one day and Avantasia the other day.
Yeah, we were on tour with Edguy in 99 and I was on the tour bus, and of course as a singer on the tour bus, you shouldn't party. Sometimes you do because human beings are stupid, but you shouldn't. You should rest your voice and you should.
It's much better to be a drummer. On tour.
Yeah, it is. It is better to be on tour, but in general, I wouldn't say so. In general, I would say no. I wanted to be busy on tour, so I wrote a little story, and I wrote some songs, and I was working on that album while we were on tour with that guy, and when the tour was over, I kept working on it, and it became what was supposed to be a one-off or two-off, two albums, the Metal Opera Part 1, Part 2. I put it to rest again after it was done, never played live, and we did a couple of Edguy albums in between then. And then I went back to Avantasia because I missed it. I missed not working in a band. Working in a band is great, don't get me wrong, but working on your own is at least as great because there's no ulcer of democracy. you know, it's, and you can make decisions on your by yourself. I mean, democracy is great theoretically, but in a band, look at the Beatles. What happened to them? Of course, they had a certain amount
Yoko
of success.
Happened.
Yeah.
They got a dictator.
Oh, you think so? I think.
Oh, Yoko was pretty much in charge.
Was she?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. In charge of what John wanted. She
okay, well
for
then it's. That was maybe a bad example, but I think, you know, I think it was great to do things outside of band and just jump in at the deep end and do my own stuff. And also it helped Edguy, because all the songs I wrote for Edguy after the first Avantasia album, mm-hmm. they were influenced by the experience of doing something of my own. I mean, they were... I really matured. I really grew when I did that stuff by myself, I have mm-hmm. to say. And working with all these...
But to throw yourself at something as big as opera must mean that you had a rudimentary love for opera before.
I liked musical, but I was not a freak or not a nerd. It wasn't like I was going to the musical show every week or something like that.
Had you been to a real opera performance?
No. Actually, not. I still haven't. I had seen musicals in London, but Starlight Express and I don't know what else at a very, very young age at school, I think, mm-hmm. when we had a school excursion to London. I don't know if I've seen anything alike, but it seemed like an interesting field. Of course, I had CDs of Jesus Christ Superstar and Phantom of the Opera. I was reading the booklets. I was into Wagner operas. I never endured listening to it back to back, all the 10 discs of the Ring of the Nibelungs.
Right.
I never did that. But I knew it existed. And to me, I liked the approach, the theatrical approach of not just being a musical thing, but also telling a story and being a complete entity of its own, a world of its own.
Was it hard to convince the record label to get songs out that are like 40 minutes long?
With seven vocalists
in the
same song?
It was,
and like convince them that it has a high commercial appeal.
There was one label that believed in it, and the rest, I mean, I tried to ship the record to other labels back then. Mm-hmm. And they all said, like, yeah, well, we give you a deal if you give us your main band.
Oh.
They were not interested in it. It was just like they were just interested in that thing, in my main band, in Edguy, not in Avantasia. And there was only one label that said, oh, I think that could be pretty big. That was my back then record label, AFM Records.
Right. Because on the paper, this is very uncommercial. It's not meant for radio consumption. When you did this, did you envision people listening to it from start to finish, like in one setting, like you see a movie or you go to an opera show?
I thought so. I was naive enough to believe it. And I think I was rightfully, there was a good reason to think so because that was different age. That was 1999 when I started working on it. That's 20 years ago.
People still listen to albums then.
People listen to albums. People were not spoiled by crap behavior. it's what nowadays everything has to be bulky and impressive at a first glimpse.
Yeah.
And everything has to be really black or white. It has to be there. It has to impress me within 20 seconds, otherwise it's crap. Mm-hmm. You know, Don't Bore Us, Bring Us to the Cars, 3 minute songs, and it has to be in a certain fashion. It has to fit. It has to be presented in a bite-sized manner. It's disgusting. I don't understand it. And
fast food music.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was back then, I think it was a little better than today.
Yeah.
But still today, there are fans who appreciate full albums, who get a vinyl, who smell the vinyl. I think it's almost like, I feel like an outcast, like a pervert, because I smell vinyls when I buy them. I smell them. I just, Oh, great, that's a great smelling record.
And then you look at that. It's an amazing scent. The scent of fresh vinyl. It's
of course.
Like you should bottle it.
And not only the scent of fresh vinyl, also, to be honest, when you buy at a secondhand store, when you buy old vinyl records, and you realize, I mean, usually they put, whenever you buy something on eBay, they write, it's a non-smoking household, you know? But when vinyls, usually rock and roll musicians or rock and roll lovers, they were smoking at home.
Yeah.
And you can smell, oh, that was a smoker.
Yeah.
Me, I don't smoke,
no, but
it's
the album was smoking.
Yeah, yeah. And to me, that's that whole experience, you know, is even the little noises before the music sets in.
But you remember the anticipation when you were a kid starting to listening to music and your favorite album was coming out and you had to wait for it and
of course.
Had to go to the record store.
Yeah.
And you had to sit in the bus looking at the cover.
And that was great. I remember sitting in the bus looking at Seventh Son of a Seventh Son. And of course you had this blue vinyl and you had Nico McBrain with a woolen pullover that he had like a the dress that Nico McBrain was wearing. It was very un-rock and roll, but it was so typical Iron Maiden because it was the way they dressed was so un-rock and roll. It was weird. And then you had the lyrics printed in there and...
Yeah, and you'd pretty much read them before you came home.
Yeah, you could sing along to the song. You didn't know what the song was, but...
No, you read everything, including printed in German.
Yeah, right? Of course.
You work with quite an impressive number of guest vocalists and musicians. How did you pick them? And let's name drop a few.
Yeah, Eric Singer.
Eric.
Bruce Kulick, Bob Catley, John Lande, Michael Kiske, Kai Hansen,
Jeff Tate,
Candice Knight, Eric Martin. This is like a who's who in rock.
Yeah, reading the Wikipedia page was like every band in heavy metal.
Well, almost. That reminds me of me getting older.
How do you get this collection of singers and musicians together?
One by one, there's an individual story between every working relation. It was, for example, the Rudolf and Klaus I met when we toured with the Scorpions. We played with that guy with the Scorpions. We had known each other, and I just simply asked, and they said, "Yeah, that's cool, great, let's do it." So that was pretty easy. Eric Singer I met when he was not in Kiss. He was the drummer of Alice Cooper back then.
I met him before that, but we became friends when he was the drummer of Alice. I know Eric really well.
He's a real great guy.
Oh, great guy.
And he's a funny guy.
Yes, funny, look out.
Talkative.
Quite so.
Shut
up, boy. He never shuts up.
he is amazing. He's got a great sense of humor. And I met him at a festival in Austria. In 99 or 2000, I think, 99 probably, he played with Gilby Clark's band.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we were introduced to each other, and we had a brief chat, and I said, "Eric, I'm doing a rock opera. Most of it is recorded, but there's one more track for drums. Would you mind playing?" He said, "Oh, send it to me. It's no problem. Oh, I can do it. No problem. Send it over. I'm going to do it at Gilby's studio." And that was it. And then when I did the Scarecrow record, I said, "Eric, this sounds not just one track. I want to do 20 tracks. Can you come over and spend 4 weeks in Germany? We're going to go to the studio. We're going to shoot a video." And he said, "Oh, well, yeah, December. Yeah, that pretty much, if I'm going to be home by Christmas, that's good. No problem."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
End of November, he came. We spent so much time together. He's a great guy, a great drummer. And so that became friendship. And we did that album, The Scarecrow. And I said, "This song would be perfect for Alice." "Well, I'm going to ask Alice. No worries. I'm going to do it." He asked Alice Cooper. 2 weeks later, I got the confirmation. "Yes, Alice is going to do the track."
I have a funny Eric Singer story. I was at his house in L.A. In the mid-90s. And we were sitting there, and he showed me his grandfather's gun. He had a Luger, the German officer's gun. From the Second World War.
Okay.
And I loved guns, and we went out shooting a lot of times. And I was playing around with this like a real Luger, and I did this mantelpiece thing, and I went boing, and a spring went off, and the whole thing just fell into pieces. And I spent 2 hours looking for that spring in his house. I ruined his grandfather's gun.
Don't let him into your house. Just don't. Tell us about Moonglow. That's your release, next release.
Yeah.
How it's been quite long in the making.
It's been very long in the making, not because we screwed up so badly at times, but because I didn't want to do anything. I came back from the Ghost Lights World Tour, mm-hmm. and I was a little tired, I have to admit. I was tired, and I didn't know. All my life I had been doing things that I really felt and that I wanted to do and that I loved, and I thought, you do something you love. You don't have the right to be tired. So, but then I was looking at what I had done, and I found out that I had written 17 albums in 20 years and done 10 world tours in 15 years.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And I realized, and plus all the organizing of two bands, I did the management for both bands. I wrote all the songs. Long story short, I had all the rights in the world to be tired. So I said, okay, for the first time in my life, I don't have a record contract with Edguy, not with Avantasia. I'm going to have a break. I'm out of here. Nobody going to ask me anything. I don't know when I'm going to return to working. I'm done. I got to find myself a hobby. Then I build a studio myself. Which is not really...
That's not really a hobby in your line of work.
No. But that's what I thought is a good... Yeah. And now you're saying, you should have told me that before. I build a
it's
studio...
It's like a stamp collector who starts to work at the post office.
Yeah. No, but I had the studio, and then I thought, no, well, now that you have a studio, you got to use it. And I had ideas. When I said I'm not going to have a contract, I'm not going to do anytime soon, ideas kept flowing, and I had the studio handy now. That was a temptation. I went in there, started working on things. In the beginning, I thought maybe it's going to be a solo project. And then the songs sounded like my songs. They sounded like Avantasia songs. And I said, well, Avantasia, in essence, is a solo project. So I started working on it, and after a while I said, okay, it would be a shame if I would record all this beautiful music in this very expensive studio that I've just got. I should record it and sell it, and I should get a record contract for Avantasia because it is Avantasia. But I didn't want to deal it myself, so I hired an attorney. He got me a record deal. Funny enough, to break out of my working routine with a label that I had worked before for 12 or 13 years. So nothing really new, and I had the Avantasia record pretty much done in October 2018. I had 2.5 years pretty much from first ideas to finishing the record, which was a very long time. I must admit there is more songs that have been put on the back burner. So there are 15 more songs or something like that, or ideas floating around.
You're going to use them later for the next album?
Yeah.
Are you a perfectionist when you sit in the studio? Do you know when it's time to abandon a song and say, it's done?
Well, yeah.
Or do you go, oh, I can fix this?
No. I'm not afraid of letting loose and letting go. Mm-hmm. I'm a perfectionist. I want things my way. Some people would say stubborn. but then if somebody makes a good suggestion, Sasha always laughs about it because I consider myself to be stuck on Sasha the producer, Sasha Payne. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I go, okay, I want it this way and that way and that way. And Sasha says, well, I have this suggestion. It's a little bit different. It does something completely different. I say, yeah, or that way maybe.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, but what do you prefer? Well, what do you prefer? You're a producer too. We're a production team. So you make that decision now. So I am a professionalist, but not... I would consider myself stubborn because sometimes I really want to have something my way, but I am relaxed enough to say, okay, now this is good. We could do it another way. We could do it this way. We could do it that way.
So, but when this project started, you said it was meant to be just a studio project and not be performed on stage. And it took you up until 2008 before you started to tour.
Yeah,
What made you decide to move it to the stage, and what challenges did that present?
It wasn't meant to be played live on stage, not at all. And that was a relief for me because I could create all this music that I never had to worry about how we're going to transport this to a stage. I could do everything and go crazy. Now, it was a promoter of the biggest German festival offering me a good amount of money to do it, actually, and offered me, it was not only about the money, I was offered to headline Wacken Open Air, 80,000
wow.
people, Saturday night, live TV broadcast, biggest stage, 2 hours, and a good amount of money. And he said, do you want to do it?
I mean, perfect exposure, let's be honest.
And I said, I don't want to do it, but then I thought about it again, because Sasha Pair, the producer, he said, well, I can play guitar. We're going to find a band. We can do this live. Mm-hmm. We don't need to have every singer. Of course, Michael Kiske back then, he was obviously not going on stage. He for sure not at a heavy metal festival with all these satanic people in front of the stage. He didn't want to do that. So we knew we would just have a smaller lineup than on the album. But Sasha said, hey, we got to have 3 or 4 singers with different voices that kind of transport the idea of Avantasia, and everybody can take over different sorts of songs, and we can split them among 3 or 4 singers, and we can transport this to a stage. We're gonna have big backing vocals and a choir. I mean, choir, 2 backing vocalists we had then, but Oliver Hartmann, the guitar player, great backing singer. The bass player was a great backing singer. So, long story short, we knew it would be possible. And then when you get the offer of playing the biggest heavy metal festival in Europe or in the world
probably,
as a headline act, 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock, 2 hours, main stage, 75,000 people officially, but there was talk it was closer to 100. I said, if you turn down that offer, why did you get into the music business in the first place?
Right.
You get the biggest spot one can have.
From
maybe...
Coachella.
Donington, right. Or Coachella wasn't existing back then, no. But it was... Like,
but that's
was
not only... I mean, that's not metal.
It's not metal now.
No,
it's just
like
a very
core
big festival.
Audience.
It was Donington or Rock in Rio was...
Yeah. Rock in Rio, that's a million people. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Monsters of Rock, that was that dimension.
Yeah.
It was like headlining Monsters of Rock.
Mm.
And I said, well, if I turn down that offer, if there is something like a god, he will look down at me and will say, no, you ruined your chance. You had your chance, boy.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw my chances at someone else.
And was it fun once you made it? Was it a great experience?
It was the greatest thing I've ever experienced. I went on stage the first time. I was on autopilot. I went on stage and there was this energy from 80,000 people coming. And it was just like, I remember it. We did. I didn't know, I was nervous and I didn't know what to expect. And I went on stage and all of a sudden, you see, as far as the eye can see, people, and it was going in waves when they were clapping. It was going in waves. And I was there and they were singing along to the songs. And I said, that's amazing. 80,000 people waving their hands. That's, everybody's got 2 of them. That's 160,000 hands being waved from left to right and clapping them. And it was a primal energy and I for sure I don't regret it.
Right, that's great.
How does Moonglow differ from the previous albums, would you say?
It's new song titles.
Primarily new songs.
I gotta tell you, these German guys, when they change things, they really change things.
Yeah.
I remember criticizing Rudolph because with the Scorpions, they toured for 3 or 4 years with the same show. Everything was the same. They came with a new album, the stage looked the same. And I said, Rudolph, can't you change the stage? Well, for this tour, we have 2 mic stands.
Yeah, but you see, it's a very subtle change, but it makes the whole world a huge difference. You know? It's I think it's the most embellished. We've always had embellished works, but we have with this record. I think it's even more embellished than the previous ones, because there was so much time to put things aside. Go back at them, not because I thought, what can we change? But no, just because it was there, and you think this is not really perfect yet. We could change something. There was no deadline.
Did you bounce things off each other, you and your producer?
Yeah. Sometimes I remember I was in a hotel during the Ed Guy tour in 2017, the anniversary tour we did. I was in the hotel, and I came up. I had my keyboard, I have my recording device with me most of the time. Keyboard and mobile studio at the hotel, and I was not happy with one Book of Shallows, the second song with the intro of the with the keyboard section on the guitar riff, and I played around with it, and I have these new keyboard sounds, and I played a little and I adjusted that, and now it's perfect, now it's good. So if you have that time, you will embellish things a little more and diversify things a little more. And what I also have to say is that I think the lyrics of the album, they are probably some of my most personal lyrics I've ever written. It's a very, because I came out of this situation where I was really asking myself, am I part of a machinery? Am I just fulfilling expectations of other people? Because I look back on that huge amount of work that I had done, and I was tired, as I said a little bit, and I had the feeling that I had to question myself if everybody around had an idea of what was coming next.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what was coming next, but everybody else knew what I was doing next. People were asking, well, you're going to play Wacken next year? Is it with Edgar Avantasia? Next one, okay, next year, who are you going to release an album with? Edgar Avantasia. And other people were coming and saying, okay, live, you're doing a live DVD, right? Because he recorded the last tour with Avantasia. It's going to be the live. When is it going to come out? This year or early next year? Everybody had an idea of what I was doing, and it seemed like nobody really cares about what I want. Everybody knows what I'm going to do anyway. So I said, no, I have to make sure I've got into this business to be creative and work at my own pace. And that took a lot of weight off my shoulders once I made the decision, no, now I'm going to function at my own pace. I'm not going to live up to expectations, to schedules, to a pace of someone else, not the record industry, no bandmates, no fans, nothing. And so I, once that weight got lifted off my shoulders, I could write about my situation a lot, and I was writing very personal things and putting them into that lyrical concept of the album, which is kind of a different sort of story. I created a character that would be my alter ego in a Victorian dark world.
Mm-hmm. Cool. We need to finish off, and we always finish with the cringe song, which is a song that you like, but you really don't want to admit that you like among your friends, because they may start throwing eggs at you or something, because it's something that you may be ashamed of digging.
I'm in the fortunate position that I don't have friends.
That's a good one. You can listen to anything.
I can listen to whatever I want because I don't have fucking annoying friends throwing eggs at me. But if you, a song that is really embarrassing, I like David Hasselhoff's Everybody's Sunshine.
Ooh.
ooh, nobody else likes that. So that's really something to be ashamed of. Looking for freedom is also really bad.
It's also really bad, but I think everybody's sunshine. What a feeling. The instrumentation when the keyboard sets in, that reminds me of 80s Magnum.
I think you win.
Yeah, this is that's is really something.
You should really be standing in the corner now.
Yeah.
good talking to you.
Good talking
Thank
to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Och vi säger förstås som vi brukar säga.
Up your bottom.
Eller hej då.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.